I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hey everybody, welcome into The Memo for this Wednesday, the 5th of April, 2017. I'm back, no longer sick.
You were gone?
That's Derek Russell. Let's see. It's kind of stuff.
I don't remember you being gone.
It's
honestly
kind of stuff I have to put up.
I don't remember.
I missed both episodes last week.
Well,
I mean, I did an interview for
one. We only
did
one episode last week, and I honestly don't remember you not being here for it. That should be a compliment.
Why?
It was like you never left.
Or something.
So I'd take it as a compliment and go with it.
So you thought I was here.
If you want to be petty, that's up to you, but you know, I'm trying to be nice.
Sure. Chris Kiefer also here, the producer of this fine program.
Hello.
Which comes to you Wednesdays and Fridays, normally.
Yes.
Today is the newsier edition of
Made possible by a grant from the Human Foundation.
The Human Foundation.
Money for people.
Would you like to make a donation on behalf of the Human Foundation?
The Human Foundation.
Just give it to me. I'll pass it along.
I make one every Christmas.
Oh, boy. What's happening? What'd I miss?
End of the year to get that tax break. I don't know. Like I said, I didn't know you weren't here, so
well,
I don't know what you missed.
Actually, we've all been really kind of busy lately with this new system.
I don't know what you've been doing.
I've been busy.
You got replaced by a machine.
No. See, we're getting this new, for people who don't know, we've got this new content management system, as it's called.
Sounds fancy.
Why don't you dumb that down a little bit?
Which is a way, anyway, people, it's just an easier
basically
way.
Basically, we got a computer Brad.
It's an easier way for the whole workflow thing, for stories to get written and put onto the page. And
correctly.
Online.
Unlike, you know, there's no room for human error. Like,
so what this means for me
is you're out of a job.
I won't have to get up at 6 o'clock 7 days a week and manually post stories at djournal.com.
Which means he's fired.
I have other duties. Hello, The Memo. I got this.
Not sure you can hold down a salary based on a couple of podcasts.
I got Prep Rally. I got double coverage I got to put together. I've got the news break. I've got the Capital View webcast.
We're going to have to find some other activities for you to partake in.
And I help.
Maybe you could start writing.
And I play a pretty.
Do you need help with the monster, Derek?
No, I don't need any help. I don't need to be replaced. I'm responsible for my own actions.
I'm the online content coordinator. Uh-huh. So like when news happens,
but our content now coordinates itself.
But I coordinate with reporters to get the news out there
but
and
now,
keep an eye on things.
Now,
let them know what's
happening. What exactly would you say you do here? But see, now our content coordinates itself.
We're all a little bit of Brad now,
which is dirty, but you know, it just feels icky. But
there's
you know,
a story that's breaking. Uh-huh. I play a role in making sure that stuff gets out there online.
But you don't anymore.
And social media manager, hello, I do that too. I wear a lot of hats. Come on, I'm just putting one hat to the side for most of the. I mean, I still have to.
You'll still be doing a lot of curating, for lack of a better word, will you not?
That's the good word. That's the word
of good. It's a museum now.
The website curator, djournal.com. And I work with all the weeklies.
We're having to create terms for you to make you feel useful now.
Coordinate with all the weekly papers, and sometimes they have news that needs to come to our site. Uh-huh. And you know,
would you like a shovel? Because you're digging a big hole.
I feel like I'm explaining myself quite well and defending my position in this company.
I'm just giving you a hard time. You don't have to defend yourself. When we were in training, and you both were in training, you were in there. We took a break, and I turned around, and Brad was looking at me, and I was like, "So you're useless."
Generally speaking, yes.
His wife agrees with me.
No,
I don't know that, but no, it's just funny.
Some days
I had a laugh. I don't know.
You did.
Well, it was good. It was, you know, it was like, and here's how everything you post, you schedule it to go online, and you make it go online. And I was like, huh.
It'll just make my life a little less
stressful. What
does
the spiky-haired one do now?
I get to sleep in until maybe 8 o'clock on a Sunday. Whoa.
I don't want to
be crazy.
I don't want to hear you complain about your Sundays. I don't want to hear about it.
No, I'm just saying it'll be nice. I value my sleep.
Maybe you come up here and work a few Sundays for me now. Maybe you do that.
No, I'm good.
Yeah,
I've done my share of Sundays in the past.
That's what I figured.
Listen.
Well, it's good you still have some use.
At least you don't have to do like a Dan Mullen teleconference on a Sunday.
I bet those were the best.
Teleconferences are the worst.
Especially with Dan Mullen, right?
Well, I mean, it's not for me to say.
There's a reason I didn't go into sports, Brad.
There's a reason I got out of sports. Tell you who my favorite was. You don't play favorites, but there are certain coaches you enjoy speaking with more than others. Generally speaking, most football coaches are not the most fun to deal with. That's just across the board, especially at this level, at the SEC level.
Especially when they have injuries.
Especially when you ask about injuries. Malcolm Johnson. Go look it up on YouTube.
is this a clip of him yelling at you?
Oh, there's a clip out there. It got it went semi-viral, at least among the MSC fans. Johnson. It's on YouTube there. I asked, I don't know if Malcolm Johnson will just look up Dan Mullen injuries, maybe. I asked him about an injury to Malcolm Johnson, and he said, you know, we don't talk about injuries. And I asked some kind of follow-up question still dealing with injuries, and he threatened to walk out. And finally, David Brandt convinced him to stay, which I don't know. I don't know if he was actually going to walk out, but he said he was. He stood up and headed toward the door. Then we finished the interview. He just, you know, not going to talk about injuries, unless he does.
Right.
Which sometimes he would just randomly talk about injuries. I've probably got it saved in my favorites somewhere. I'll show it to you later. It's good stuff.
So who speaking of favorites?
John Cohen was always fun. He's now the AD, but he was the baseball coach. And baseball coaches, just, you know, by the nature of, you know, of the sport, they tend to be more accessible. You don't have to go through as much.
I dealt with him a lot, layers. Even at the Oxford paper, and he was always really good.
You could just, like, you know, if he was free for a minute, you could walk into his office and talk to him. And Rick Stansberry, God love him. As much as, you know, he never learned how to send a text message, but talking to him was always fun. He was very quotable, and everybody has their own Rick Stansberry impression. You know, guys, it's tough on that road. So, and Rick was one of the people. I got in that bad wreck in 2010 on the way to a press conference, the Rick Stansberry press conference. He and Greg Byrne, the former AD, both called me in the hospital and wished me well, which I was surprised. That was nice of them to do. Very classy. So,
that is.
So those two guys. And Greg Byrne, for his matter, for him as well. I always enjoy dealing with him. I'm sure you have the same thing, Derek. Certain people you prefer to talk to over others.
Yeah.
Sources.
I prefer to talk to Chris over you.
Well, there you go. I don't blame you. Nicest man on the planet.
Fake news.
Trying to make somebody dead. I'd rather talk to Hitler than talk to you.
But whoa. It'd
be fascinating to talk to Hitler. Just to go, what was wrong with you?
He'd probably just go on some diatribe against you
in German. You wouldn't
I don't
even
speak
understand
German.
It.
That was fucking me. That was the closer to my joke.
I took four semesters of it, and I probably wouldn't understand a thing he said. So, who we got on the show today? Caleb Bedillion. He's on the show.
Bedillion,
we'll talk about the police advisory board that just got approved by the city council Tuesday. Bobby Harrison going to come on and wrap up the 2017 legislative session that concluded last week. Dennis Sid has an update on Contour Airlines. And Thomas Wells, with his he had the In Focus photo essay this week. Pretty fascinating stuff going inside the repair shop at the Tupelo Public Works.
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah, cool. Let's do a show.
Okay.
Let's welcome in local government reporter Caleb Bedillion. Caleb, how are you today?
I'm well, Brian.
Good, good, man. I want to talk about this police advisory board. It officially was approved by the city council last night.
That's right. This thing has been batted around for, well, really since last September, August, and city council officially approved the creation of it last night.
And, you know, we've talked about this before, and so now that we've got this approved, going forward, kind of what's the next step in getting this thing put together? Because I know they're going to have the city council members each get to pick.
Right. So there will be 9 citizens from the city of Tupelo. So you have to live in the city of Tupelo.
Right.
9 people will sit on the advisory board. Each city council member will pick 1 person from their ward, and then the mayor will select 2 people that can live anywhere in the city.
Sure.
So that's the next step, is council members and the mayor need to start submitting their appointments, and then the full slate of appointments has to be approved by the council.
Yeah.
So it's not as if the mayor automatically gets to put 2 people on there, or even that ward 1 councilman, Markle Whittington, automatically. They get to advance names,
sure,
and then the council has to approve that list.
I'm curious if they talk much about how they want it to look demographically, race and age and all that.
I asked Jason Shelton, the mayor, if he had made any of his decisions about his appointments. Automatically, he had one that he told me. He said, I'm going to put Bill Allen on the board. Now, Bill is a more or less a lifelong Tupelo resident, except for some time he spent in the military. He's a retired Army colonel. Okay. He actually chaired the study committee that was appointed last year to look at the issue of whether Tupelo should have an advisory board.
Right.
And so the mayor told me he thinks it's good to have someone who was part of that process who knows how we got here. But the mayor told me he's going to wait on his second appointment until he has seen all of the council appointments. And he said if there's a need then, if the board is a little imbalanced racially, or if, you know, we end up with all male appointments and we don't have any female appointments made to the board, the mayor will use his second appointment to kind of fill out some of those demographics a little bit. And then, of course, I mean, if the board is fairly balanced, he'll...
He'll
pick someone, I guess, just however he wants to.
Sure.
I talked to some of the other council members. Some said they haven't made up their mind yet. Some said they have but weren't really ready. They haven't formally made the appointment yet. And I got the impression in at least some cases they may not have spoken in detail with the person about it. Right. So I'll be checking in with City Hall waiting to see when those names start to come in.
Yeah, that kind of brings me to my next question, the timeline on this or how quickly they're trying to get this put together.
I talked to Chief Operations Officer Don Lewis. He handles a lot of the logistical type stuff. He's somewhat optimistic the board might meet for the first time in June. Once it's operating, the board will meet monthly. All the members have to be approved first. Don is really wanting to wait. Theoretically, I mean, if he got three appointments in this week, he could put them on the list to be approved at the next city council meeting in April. But that would only be three of the nine. Of course, I'm making these numbers up. But Don's preference is to get all the nominations in at once and then approve them all at once.
Okay.
So realistically, it's probably going to be sometime in May before any of these nominees get approved. And so then the board will begin to meet thereafter. I mean, theoretically, they could all be approved at the second April meeting and then start to meet in May. But that's
kind of quick.
That's kind of quick. Wheels of government, you know, that would be unusually fast. So there are other things going on. June, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't meet in June either. So we'll have to see on that front.
You know, this from what Tupelo officials have been able to gather, there's really not an advisory board like this in Mississippi, we don't think. Now, there are some around the nation.
Right. Well, certainly. Of course, terminology here is important.
Okay.
You have civilian review boards. So the review board is what we heard some people calling for last summer after the controversy over the Antoine Shumpert shooting.
Right.
Now, review boards, they tend to look different in different places, but typically they have some kind of oversight capacity.
Yeah.
They either, if an allegation of wrongdoing against a police officer is made, independently investigate that allegation, or some review boards, they get a copy of the internal affairs investigation. They look at it to make sure that it looks like a forthright, serious effort investigation was made and that it wasn't just a rubber stamp type deal. Some members of the city council and the mayor attended a conference, I believe it was last August in New Mexico, that was on the issue of civilian review of law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really what we've got in Tupelo. And in fact, several city council members who voted for it have been very vocal that they are voting for this because it was an advisory board and not a review board. So the idea is the advisory board here in Tupelo will try and take the pulse of the community as it relates to the police department. If, you know, members of the community have concerns, the advisory board there is to hear those concerns. And then they can pass that along to the police department and try and facilitate two-way communication. They can take things back from the police department to the community. They're intended to really be a point of contact.
Liaison between the community and police.
Exactly.
Kind of help them engage, which has been a focal point.
A means of facilitating communication.
Sure.
So that is the vision there. And Police Chief Bartigari doesn't know of any other police department in the state that has a formal advisory board.
Right.
I know back when When some of this talk about a review board first got started last summer, I spoke with Oxford's police chief, Joey East, who is currently the head of the State Police Chiefs Association. And at the time, he told me he had concerns about civilian review boards, but he said he thought the advisory board concept was a good idea. He said he basically had an informal advisory group. So Oxford has no formal advisory board, but Chief East told me there were particular community leaders he tried to stay in contact with. But again, that's not what Tupelo has, which is now an official city-created advisory board. City Attorney Ben Logan, who wrote the ordinance that created this thing, couldn't find another one either. So, I mean, it's possible there was one in the past that went defunct, or there may be kind of informal ones, but it doesn't look like there's anything quite like what Tupelo has done.
So, nothing. So this board has no investigative or subpoena power, anything like that. Like you said, it's just to kind of take concerns of the citizens and pass them along, discuss them, and but they will get, they'll have access to like certain information that maybe, because they have to sign some kind of disclosure, non-disclosure agreement.
That would be on a voluntary basis. So the city can keep personnel records private. So that would be, you know, if an officer was disciplined, the city's under no requirement to publicize that. Certainly, you know, if I file a Freedom of Information Act, a Public Records Act request, there are certain things the city has to give me, but personnel records aren't one of those things.
Right.
But the advisory board members will have to sign non-disclosure agreements. And as far as I can tell, the police chief will have the discretion, you know, if there is a controversy over an issue, he could meet with the board in a closed executive session and say, here's some of the background we did or didn't find there was wrongdoing. Here's what happened. But since that is a confidential personnel matter, the board will be required to sign a non-disclosure agreement. So they can't then turn around and publicize something the city is keeping private.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's the potential that they could be able to learn that kind of information and could speak kind of generally to the community and say, you know, we found out some information. There's nothing here, or there is something here, but the police department has taken care of it. But they would only be able to speak very, very broadly.
Yeah, and of course, this all kind of sprang out of the whole Ronnie Shumpert shooting from last summer, the police officer that shot and killed him, and has been cleared of wrongdoing. But, you know, a lot of people obviously believe that it was a wrongful death.
Right.
So, God forbid something like this happens again. No, what the advisory board? What could they do at that point if it's an extreme situation like that? Would they still just have a regular monthly meeting? Would they have a special meeting?
Sure. Well, certainly there are provisions in the ordinance that the board could meet, have a special meeting. So, you know, obviously what they would do in another situation depends a lot on the details of the situation and the people on the board. You know, certain possibilities include the advisory board could have a special meeting, kind of a community forum, to try and give people some constructive ways to voice their concerns instead of, you know, getting on social media and spreading, you know, a lot of rumors, false information that we saw. The advisory board could facilitate some communication in that respect. I would imagine, you know, even last summer, we did eventually under the kind of pressure of public demands, see the city release information they didn't have to legally.
Right.
They released information that the police department was surveilling a local motel over concerns that there was drug activity happening there.
Right.
Jason Shelton did reveal some personnel information to a New York Times reporter, told the reporter, you know, some past incidents the officer that shot Ronnie Shumpert had been involved in.
Right.
You know, I would imagine especially with last summer's experience, city leaders might try and be a little more proactive, meet with the advisory board privately, try and explain the situation, and then the advisory board could turn around and say, you know, look, this is what they couldn't say exactly what they've been told, but they could say either we're satisfied with what we've heard.
Yeah.
There appears to be there may be smoke, but there doesn't look to be a fire here. Or, you know, if they didn't like what they were hearing, they could, at least in those private meetings, say, look, you know, what you're telling us isn't good enough. If it looks like there's a problem here, you need to investigate this more closely. The dynamics there will depend a lot on who ends up on this advisory board.
Right. All right. Well, I'm sure, of course, you'll keep tracking this story going forward. Y'all can read his update in the Wednesday Journal or at djournal.com. Caleb, as always, thank you for your time.
Sure thing. Glad to be here.
Hey, look for the two sports podcasts we produce here at the Daily Journal. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with myself, Blake Morgan, and Gene Phelps. New episodes air every Wednesday. Listen to them for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. Look for a new episode today. Just going to be myself and Blake as Gene is out on assignment. And for Ole Miss and Mississippi State fans, you'll want to check out the Double Coverage podcast. Ole Miss beat reporter Parrish Alford and MSU reporter Logan Lowry release a new episode each Thursday afternoon or thereabouts, sometimes a Friday. But they provide game previews, insight, commentary, and analysis on the Bulldogs and Rebels. Listen to that for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com.
You can also wake up and get ready for your day with the Daily Journal's News Break. That's a quick summary of news, sports, weather, and everything else Northeast Mississippi in a five-minute video hosted by Brad Locke.
Yay.
You can find News Break each weekday at 7 a.m. at djournal.com, Facebook, YouTube, or the Daily Journal's mobile apps for Apple and Android devices.
Let's welcome Capitol Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison into the memo. How you doing, Bobby?
Hey, Brad. How you doing?
Doing well, sir. Got another legislative session in the books, so you can just kick your feet up, sit back, relax, smoke a cigar. You're good, right?
That's what I'm doing right now, bro.
Nice. If only, Bobby, if only. There's still some work to be done, isn't there?
Well, there is. There's some work to be done for the legislature. They left without funding the Office of Attorney General Jim Hood, the Department of Transportation, and the State Aid Road Program. So, you know, the irony is they went into the to session saying they needed to spend more money on roads and bridges, and they left the session without spending any money on roads and bridges. So
we're going to have
there you go.
We're going to have a special session at some point here. Bobby, any idea on when that might happen?
It's got to, you know, the new budget year begins July 1st, so it's got to be before then, Brad. My guess is, and it's strictly a guess, is it won't be before sometimes in May, and it wouldn't surprise me if it's in June. You know, the reason that the there's no budget for transportation and state aid road programs is that the House leadership killed those budget agreements because they said they wanted to try to force the Senate leadership to the table to talk about options to spend more money on infrastructure. So I think they're going to try, at least the House leadership is hopeful that they're going to have those conversations before they come back in special session.
Yeah, that's been one of the big issues, that and education funding, which is something else that didn't get done, the rewrite that they talked about with Ed Build. Looks like, Bobby, it looks like that's just going to get pushed till next year, probably.
Who knows, Brad? That's been done behind closed doors. There's been very little done in public on that. You know, the leadership, Speaker Philip Gunn in the House and Lieutenant Governor Tate Reeves, who presides over the Senate, say they want to rewrite the Mississippi Adequate Education Program that, you know, provides state money to the local school districts for basic operation. They say they want to rewrite that. And, you know, I think the intent is still to do it in a special session, but I think what they're trying to do is develop a funding formula that they can get enough votes to pass in the House and Senate, and it apparently they hadn't been able to do that yet, so that work goes on. I mean, it wouldn't surprise, I mean, to me it's 50-50. It could be done in special session or tried in special session, or they could just push it off until the 2018 regular session.
Well, Bobby, with this session ending last week, just kind of want to get some general thoughts from you on some of the big hits or big misses from the legislature, some things that got accomplished and some notable things that maybe didn't, which I think we kind of talked about that a little bit as far as the budgets.
Yeah, you know, the big thing is that it went into the session focusing on rewriting the MAEP. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about providing more money for roads and bridges. There's a lot of groups that say the road and bridge problem is a deteriorating condition of the roads and bridges. The infrastructure in general in the state is a big issue, and that more money needs to be found to deal with that. And, you know, so those were maybe the two big issues going into the session, and neither one of them were addressed in the session. And then the other big issue, I think, Brad, is just, you know, the budget in general. You know, the legislature appropriated a budget of about $6 billion in just state support funds. Just that's general taxation in Essex. And that is, well, I think about $330 million less than it was appropriated in the 2016 session. So there was major cuts for a lot of agencies, all the way from IHL to public health, to mental health, to just many others. You know, they were able to crow. They did get a trooper school funded. You know, that's a lot of people say that's a dire need because of the shortage of troopers on the highways. They're getting to be older, and a lot of them were retiring. So they did get a trooper school that could put up to 70, 75 more troopers on the highways in, I guess, about 6 months. But in general, the budget condition was pretty rough.
You know, the sluggish revenue collections, a big reason for these budget cuts that you just talked about. But we did get some good news Tuesday, Bobby. March collections are up about 12.5% over projections. Any way to pinpoint why that is?
Well, yeah, you know, and that's the first month that they exceeded projections, I think, since May of 2016. So that was a big deal. But I mean, we had to wait a month or two to see if that trend holds. You know, they last year they changed the reporting deadline for businesses from I think March 15th to April 15th. So they weren't sure if businesses were going to go ahead and file on the old reporting deadline or wait until April 15th. And so just about all of the increase in revenue for March was. Or it wasn't business taxes, corporate taxes. So, you know, the next month or two, we're going to see what happens with those. And it may be just a 1 month trend because of the change in law, or, you know, or it could, if it's more than a 1 month trend, that's welcome for legislators, especially the leadership that's been hit for, you know, criticized by a lot of different groups for the massive tax cuts they've given in the past few years that, you know, some people say have led to the downturn in revenue collections.
Now, something else I want to hit on here real quick, Bobby. State lottery, that's an issue just keeps rearing its head, it looks like. And Philip Gunn, the House Speaker, has said he's going to form a committee to study the issue, which for proponents, Bobby, is a pretty big step, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's been one of the main obstacles to a lottery vote in the legislature. He has made no secret of the fact that he's opposed to the lottery, for, I think, first on religious grounds, but B, he talks about how the lottery doesn't generate as much new revenue as some people claim it does, because what you're doing is just sort of recycling. You know, you're taking that spendable income that might be spent at a store and spending that income instead on a lottery ticket, so it doesn't really generate more income. Is another argument he makes. So, but he has agreed to form a committee to look at all those issues. And the question, Brad, I mean, I hadn't even written about this, but, you know, there's a little talk about it, whether the governor might include a lottery in a special session. Because, you know, the governor, who was opposed to the lottery a year ago, has become like a big proponent of the lottery. So
yeah,
that would be an interesting twist. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's just something to think about.
What do you know what this committee is going to look like, Bobby?
Well, I'm sure it'd be chaired by Richard Bennett, a Republican House member from the Gulf Coast, who chairs the House Gaming Committee. I'm sure he'll chair it. I would probably have some other legislators on it, maybe some folks from the Gaming Commission, and maybe some other experts in the area of lotteries and gambling in general. And so, and he said he's going to, you know, he said last week he was going to form it in a pretty quick order. So, I mean, I'm guessing that means maybe this month we'll see what the committee looks like.
All right. Well, good stuff as always, Bobby. Y'all can find his work in the Daily Journal and at djournal.com. Bobby's on Twitter at BobbyHarrison9. As always, Bobby, thank you for your time.
All right. Thanks, Brad.
Yes, sir. And if you want to hear more from Bobby, be sure to watch the Daily Journal's Capitol View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Bobby provides commentary and analysis on the issues of being debated in Jackson. You can watch live Monday afternoons around 2 o'clock or catch the replay later in the day. And he went a little bit more in-depth on this week's episode as far as wrapping up the 2017 legislative session and looking forward. So check that out again every Monday at djournal.com. And now it's Dennis Sid's turn to join us on the program. Hey,
good
Dennis.
Morning.
How's it going?
It's going well. How about y'all?
Great. How's the no donut thing going for Lent for you?
Hey, Easter Sunday, right?
Is that this coming Sunday? No, what's the next? Two weeks. A little bit longer.
Okay,
Dennis.
2 more weeks.
A little bit longer.
2 weeks. Never mind. I was getting excited for nothing. That'll just make those donuts so much better.
There's been a noticeable dearth of donuts in the newsroom the last few weeks because Dennis is usually the provider of said donuts.
I guess I could be nice and bring some donuts in.
I guess.
Stay away from them.
The rest of us could probably chip in every once in a while and bring some donuts. Derek does sometimes. True.
I've decided not to do it while Dennis is giving up, though.
Solidarity?
I can still eat him outside of here. I just don't want to bring him into the place.
Don't want to tempt him.
Yeah. Actually, I don't know that I've had a donut since.
It's admirable.
So, hey, can you say you haven't done something and then say I gave it up for Lynn? Just like retroactively?
Turns out, I mean...
I didn't commit murder.
I didn't kill a single guy.
Made fun of Brad a lot, though, so can't go back on that.
That's what you need to do. Yeah, need to give that up. Give that up next month.
Something to shoot for next year.
Yeah. I want to talk with you about Contour Airlines, an airline that actually is doing well, unlike some previous airlines in Tupelo.
They're flying mostly on time. They're finishing most of their flights, and things are, going pretty well.
They're usually at about 70% capacity on average, which is not bad.
Yeah, which they would like a little bit. They need to keep it at 70 and up. It's a 9-seat plane, and right. They need to average 7 passengers per flight, basically, in order to... What it boils down to is they're getting paid a big chunk of money, and it's supposed to average out to $200 per passenger.
Right.
Even though, 5,900 passengers is a good number, that still won't meet what needs to be that $200 cap. So there are things that the airline and the airport are looking at, and plus they're under the gun of perhaps this subsidy program, so called the Essential Air Service, may be eliminated. It's part of President Trump's budget. It's
right.
The program has been, under fire, for years. People have been wanting to cut it, and they're going to take another whack at it. And so there's sort of a swirling debate about what's going to happen to it.
Yeah, and this subsidy, the Contour is owned by Corporate Flight Management out of Smyrna, Tennessee. And so they get this subsidy from the U.S. Department of Transportation. As you said, it's called the Essential Air Service Program. It's about, 4.2 million over 2 years?
4.2 million per year.
Per year, I'm
for
sorry.
For 2 years. For yeah, two that's, years. That is a big chunk of money.
And they've been here in Tupelo for right at a year, haven't they?
Yeah, we've crossed the one-year anniversary.
Okay. So what's this per passenger cap? Kind of explain to people what that is and how they achieve that.
Well, the U.S. Department of Transportation is the one that oversees the Essential Air Service Program. And there was a law that was passed a few years ago that said, hey, in order for an airport airline to participate in the program, you have to meet this. You're supposed to meet this cap.
Yeah.
Now, it wasn't really enforced until probably 2014, and they decided, hey, starting with this fiscal year, maybe fiscal year 2015, we're going to go back and look at the numbers, and if you don't meet the cap, then you'll be tossed out of the program, basically.
Yeah.
So, we have a year under our belts. We need another year under the belt, and, we'll see what happens. The airports, airlines can ask for a waiver for extenuating circumstances. For example, we had the previous airline, Seaport, who pulled out early, and we were left with 5 months without air service.
Yeah.
And that's one of those extenuating circumstances that said, we'll give you a little bit of break and give you a little time to catch up to rebuild your passenger traffic.
Right, right.
And, Tupelo is one of more than 150 airports across the country that are part of the Essential Air Service Program.
So what they could do is there's this, it's called the Alternative Essential Air Service. So that's right. Something they may have to switch to?
Contour Corporate Flight Management would like to switch to, and the airport is amenable to it. And basically, instead of the money going to the airline, the money goes to the airport.
Okay.
And the airport would pay the airline as flights are completed on a monthly basis or whatever.
Okay.
There's a little more flexibility, and by doing that, CFM Contour says, hey, instead of 9 seats on a plane, we'll put those 10 seats back into it, because it's basically a converted 19-seat plane that took out 10 seats to make it 19 seats.
Yeah.
We'll put those 10 seats back, make it a 19-seater. That way we can carry more people, because like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or the heavy loads that Contour is doing well, and they're thinking, you know, maybe we can put up more pastures, you know, lower costs, you know, bring down that subsidy cap. So,
and this alternative EAS has worked for corporate flight management in other places, hasn't it?
Well, they did in three other cities. They just started in Macon, I think, in March.
But Macon, Georgia.
The first city was somewhere in Michigan.
Yeah.
Manatee, something like that, in 2012. And they were renewed to do it again.
Manistee.
Manatee. Oh, thinking about Florida. Sorry. Manistee. And then Victoria, Texas. So they've had experience doing it. So they would like to give Tupelo a try. Now, you know, whether they'll do it before the current contract runs out next year or they'll be able to do it, you know, for the subsequent contract, we'll have to see.
And then the whole possible monkey wrench in all this is the Trump budget. How could that screw things up?
They want to cut the program completely. It's funded. Congress gives discretionary budget of 100-something million to it. And then it's also funded by overflight fees by foreign air carriers who fly over the United States to have to pay a fee, and that funds the program too. So, but it's not enough to fund the entire program. That's why Congress doles out money to the program every year.
Right.
So, the Trump administration would like to cut that, but they're not the first administration to say, "Hey, we want to cut it."
Yeah.
And you know, Senator Wicker has come out and said, "Well, you know, it's essential. That's the name, and find somewhere else to cut it."
Right. So this would affect both the regular EAS and the alternative EAS.
Program all the whole kit and caboodle. You know, Tupelo's not the only airport in the state that relies on EAS, because you also have Greenville and Hattiesburg, Laurel, and Meridian rely on EAS as well. So, we're not the only ones in the boat.
I got you. Well, y'all can read a lot more about it in Sunday's story that Dennis had. Find it at djournal.com as well. Good in-depth reporting there on that whole situation. Dennis, appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
Thomas Wells coming on this Wednesday. Thomas, you had another... Some of my favorite photo assignments are ones that you guys do, or photo essays for InFocus, or the ones you guys do for jobs nobody thinks about.
Yeah, this was one that really nobody thinks about. Yeah. They don't realize how many cars the city owns, and somebody's got to maintain those things.
That's right. So Tupelo Public Works, you took a visit to their garage.
Yeah, and literally four or five guys sit back there and repair everything, and it was kind of weird, because you walk in there and there's all these police cars that you don't ever see on the side of the road broken down.
Sure.
They're always, you know, riding around town.
Yeah, you never think about a fire truck having to be repaired or anything.
I asked him about that. I said, you know, what happens when you get here in the morning? There's cars waiting on you. He goes, oh, yeah, there's always cars waiting up with a little sign that says, hey, I need the oil changed or something's gone bad. And it's, you know, fire trucks take precedence. When a fire truck rolls up, they stop what they're doing and fix it.
Yeah.
And the ambulances are second. And, of course, the police cars are third. They have enough reserve cars they can put back in service.
And then I assume their own public work truck.
Their own public works trucks. And they work on everything from hydraulics to the backhoes to the dump trucks to... They can do it all.
It's pretty amazing just to see that done. But again, like you said, it's just something you don't think about. You don't ever see a fire truck broken down on the side of the road.
Absolutely. You know, I was talking to him, and it's, if you think about it, a police car, a squad car, stays in the road 24 hours a day. You know, they'll put, you know, the seat never gets cold. They'll put 25, 30,000 miles on it in a month. And he said, you know, they got to change the oil three or four times in a month.
Yeah.
He said, it doesn't take long, and they'll blow up engines and... You know, all kinds of stuff. And
so what did you see when you went in that day? What were they working on?
They had three police cars and they were working on. One of them was wrecked. Had been totaled in a wreck, which was kind of odd. I didn't know a police car had been in a car wreck, but a woman had pulled out in front of them at a red light, ran a red light, and they hit them broadside and totaled the squad car.
That'll happen.
Yeah, that'll happen. Do it every time. They were pulling the engine out of it in the front end and putting it in another squad car that they had blown the engine up in. And then... They were just
like playing Legos.
Exactly.
We broke this
one,
we'll just take that one and put it in this one.
Instead of buying another engine, we'll take one out of the one that was just totaled and we'll put it over here.
There you go.
Kind of like to make the Frankenstein car, man.
Mm-hmm.
And they were working on one of the fire trucks. One of the hoses wasn't working right, the pumps and stuff. And they brought in a big
one-ton dump truck and hydraulics, and it was leaking oil, and it was a little bit of everything. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, you're walking around, and you're kind of going, they were working on their air conditioner and just a regular truck, and that's one of the funny things. They said, yeah, you know, the public works guys, he said, they're really soft. So when the weather got to 70 degrees, and we had five trucks come in, and they were, the air conditioner was out, and they wanted it fixed right then. I was like, well, you know, they are outside a lot. Yeah.
Now!
Exactly. 70 degrees, by God, I want my air conditioner fixed.
For those lunch breaks.
Yeah.
Gotta have it.
That's another thing I found interesting. They really don't get a lunch break. They'll pick a place to go eat, and they'll send somebody to go get the food and bring it back, and they just kind of eat there at the shop because they never know what is going to come up. You never know
if something's going to break and that's needed immediately.
And they have to have it fixed immediately. That's exactly right.
That's interesting, the hierarchy. I hadn't thought about that, of what needs to be fixed beyond other things.
Yeah, so it was interesting, and the fact that there's five of them there, and they try to turn everything around within a day or two.
Yeah.
Unless it's a fire truck or whatever, they try to turn it around immediately, get it fixed, and get it back on the road. So it was fascinating to see how much work they do and all the parts laying around for everything that you can think of in this huge, you know, 10-bay, you know, service center. I mean, what it basically amounts to.
Can't imagine. I mean, I'm okay working on my own car, but imagine YouTube and videos just to figure out what to do with a fire truck.
Oh, and yeah. And
I'm sure they don't need to, but in my position, I'd be like, how do you fix?
Yeah. Well, you think about it, you take your car to the shop, and they just work on a car.
Yeah.
So those mechanics are very specialized. These guys are working on everything, mm-hmm. tractors, hydraulics, you know, dump trucks, fire trucks, electronics. I mean, they're doing it all. And it was pretty amazing how much intelligence and how much you have to know about what's going on to fix a little bit of everything.
And if the ladder fell off the fire truck, I'd just be duct taping it. Go to Lowe's and get the ladder and duct tape it back on. This one's good.
Yep.
Check it out. Let's go. Anything cool you saw that you didn't get to run?
Yes, actually, it was kind of funny. One of the guys, we probably ran it online maybe, but it didn't run it in the paper. The dump truck in the background of the main photograph, it was coming in with an oil leak, and one of the guys, I think it was Justin, had gotten up under it. Yeah. No, Jason, had gotten up under it on a creeper under the front bumper. Right. And it was laying flat on his back, and on the very front of the bumper, they had, you know, you had wide load.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was up under it. It kind of looked like
that. Did make it online? Yes.
It was kind of a funny thing. When I took the photograph, two of the guys were standing behind me watching me, and I turned the monitor on to check the exposure and make sure everything was kind of in, well, not so much in focus, but I mean, make sure the lighting was right because of the way that was coming in the bays. The two guys saw the wide load, the way I'd framed it, and they just died out laughing.
Nice.
And they were like, "Oh, Jason, you're on, you know." I'm not going to repeat what they said.
Family show, Thomas.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But they kind of ribbed him a little bit. It was pretty funny.
Very good. All right. Very cool. Always enjoy when you guys take the speak into things that people hadn't thought about before. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank y'all.
Well, Derek, another fine show.
If you say so.
I say so.
Okay. Then it must be so.
The listeners probably say so as well.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you liked it, email us. We haven't done our email address in a while.
No, we haven't. So.
memo@journalink.com.
Send us your thoughts, questions, whatever. Send us your questions. We'll read them on air.
Yeah.
And then maybe provide an answer or not.
Like, who are you wearing, Brad?
Who am I wearing? Oh, I don't know. What shirt?
Nike?
I don't know who made this shirt. Who knows? The pants are Urban Pipeline, if you must know. This is the most comfortable pair of jeans I've ever worn.
Okay, right, Jeff. We don't need to get into that.
The most comfortable pair.
All right. Well, you can find us online at DJournal, memo.djournal.com.
Listen, when you get to my age, that's important.
Stories we discussed today, you can find it online at DJournal.com or in your daily journal. You can also find us on Twitter at DJournalMemo to find out when new episodes are available. Or
why are you turning your back on me?
You could subscribe to us on iTunes, and that's probably the quickest way to...
You can also find us in other podcast apps. We're in Google Play. We're in Satchel. We're in Stitcher Radio, Player.fm.
Yeah, Brad.
You name it.
If you paid attention, you'd know all this.
I know all this.
Okay, well, why don't you say it?
Because you were on a roll there, and then Chris jumped in, and I'm still trying to talk about my jeans.
We'd rather you not, if at all possible.
The most comfortable pair of jeans I've ever worn in my entire life. Bye, everybody.
We'll see you on Friday. Bye.
Goodbye.